The Antidote welcomes back Keaton Kaufman. Keaton, it has been a very long time. Thanks for coming for a talk.
Man, I'm so excited to be here, Dave. Thanks for reaching out. And yeah, dude, let's jump in.
You know, I wasn't kidding when I said it's been a long time. I had to look this up. It was 2013 when you came to speak with me about the music of your band, the 71s.
Oh my, that's crazy. So we're looking at the second decade. Dave and Keaton, decade two.
So tell me, has anything important happened since then?
You know, I would have to say that almost everything important has happened since then. All the good stuff. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I was, so 2013, the 71s was what I like to call my adolescent band, which is where I figured out kind of who I was. And second, it was the birth of my music school called Rehearsal Room. That school has now become a studio and a venue and an artist development and band development program. And it's where I make my records. So Rehearsal Room Music School turned into Rehearsal Room Records. And I'm the producer, obviously, Rehearsal Room Records. And I produce some clients that I love and believe in, but mostly, you know, I love making music with my old buddy in the 71s, whose name is Ryan Cecil. And he mixes and plays guitar on our records, and that's kind of the stuff you've heard recently. So I skipped over all the family stuff, but that's kind of how life's progressed for me musically.
Well, let's go back to the 71s.
Okay.
That was a straight-up rock and roll band. But that's not the only style you've recorded.
No.
Just a couple of years ago, Keaton Kaufman released Hard Times. And much of that album has a kind of country-influenced songs like Wounded Heart. So does this mean that you actually have no limitations?
I think I prefer to think about it like good music comes out of embracing your limitations and figuring out, oh, this is who I am. Hard Times in particular was about being stuck. There's some characters that are not autobiographical, but I kind of wrote my emotions into them in that album. So there's a lot of small town. I'm stuck in here and I'm trying to find contentment. There's hard times, but we're going to find joy in it. And then I was also going through a pretty unpredictable manifestation of my bipolar 2 condition I've lived with since I was young. But, you know, as any psychiatrist tell you, you know, sometimes it can be controlled with behavior and meds. And sometimes you just have these hard times. And yeah, so I was really having some struggles, even, you know, despite the fact that I'm chemically a pretty healthy person and all that stuff. So that's kind of how Hard Times came out. And at the same time, musically, was really just knee deep in all of my Americana heroes, whether they were Jackson Brown, Bruce Springsteen, Jacob Dylan, The Wallflowers, Tom Petty. So that kind of is what spun the album Hard Times, plus my typewriter. I have an old typewriter. I wrote it on that.
How many people actually have ever seen a typewriter?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. They don't exist a lot. Mine is a 1964 Smith Corona. It's awesome. It feels like you're pumping a shotgun when you bang out your words on a page. And yeah, I think it's a neat thing to have a couple tools that do one thing. It focuses your life and your energy.
Well, typewriters just fit with you because you're getting close to, what is it, 90 now?
Right, that is correct. 97. Tomorrow, actually, my birthday is 97. I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I'm not 97, thank God, yet. Hopefully someday, maybe.
Well, one thing is that you have been making music for a long time. Has music always been your thing? Are there any other dreams?
Actually, I was a junior Olympic gymnast. I was a gymnast for as long as I can remember, and then I retired at 20. I won some stuff, high school, national champion, all that good stuff. And my shoulder, strangely, I had a career-ending injury, but it happened in my sleep. My freshman year at University of Texas, we don't really know why, but my rotator cuff just kind of severed while I was sleeping.
Oh my.
Yeah. And so that was a really harsh left turn for my life. I mean, I could have surgery, but I was just never going to be able to compete. So I'd played music as a hobby, but that's really what began, in my opinion, kind of, you know, the universe giving me permission to be an artist, because before then I had just been an athlete.
Then what do you personally get out of making music?
Well, it feels a little bit like the surfer and the sea. I belong to it. It belongs to me. It's not really a career ambition. Making people happy with my music is a pursuit, but that's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than how many streams do I have or something like that. Like that I've pretty much abandoned. I don't really need that right now to make myself feel good. Thank God. And now what music does for me, I don't know. I really don't think of myself as separate from music. I don't know another way to put it. I wake up, whatever part of my life is ongoing, it moves itself out into the world via synthesizers or lyrics or drum machines or my band. You know, I jump in the sea. That's it.
I hear you. So it truly is a passion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would say it's an obsession.
It's a good obsession. It's a creative obsession.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all things that become great are obsessions. What a wonderful thing to belong to.
Keaton Kaufman released a couple of new singles in May. One of those new songs is about lost love on Catherine. And the lyrics say, "Catherine, I will bring you home. On wings of love I've flown. Through endless night and sea, come back to me." Now, I'm assuming it's a true story.
It's a true story for everyone. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to put, you know, you on the spot, Dave, but to any listener out there, I would be surprised if they don't have a Catherine. Maybe it's not romantic, but I think we've all had that person that we speak into the abyss, hoping they'll speak back, and we, you know, we can't hear them anymore.
Then the song purpose is to jerk on people's heartstrings.
That's a wonderful way of putting it. I would say it's to give people permission to feel that it's okay to long for someone that you know is never coming back.
You're the songwriter, so tell me, what are the odds of Catherine returning?
This record, which I don't want to jump ahead, but I'm releasing it one single at a time over the course of 2024. And the album's called Coefficient of Fiction. And the reason it's called that is because there's actually a scientific term called the coefficient of friction. Mm-hmm. And it's a property that all materials have, you know, it's the level to which they cause friction on another force. Carpet has a certain coefficient of friction and oil has another, you know, there's different. For me, art in a fictitious form has always spoken to me with a lot of power. And so that's why I named the record that, the coefficient of fiction. Doesn't mean it's not true. It just means maybe it's make-believe. Those are different things. Something can be fictitious but still be very, very true. That's what I wrote the record about. And I know that people are interested in my story, but you know, at this point, I'm much more interested in helping people connect with their own story. And so, does Catherine come back? Again, that's not in the poem. The song's for the person listening, and you know, I hope for their sake they do come back.
The reason I ask that is because so many people can't stand anything that's open-ended. Personally, I love open endings. But my wife, she's the polar opposite. If it doesn't have a concise ending, she doesn't want to hear, read, or see it.
I think open endings are so hard because they force tension in our life. We are forced to either hope when there isn't any, or we're forced to wait when we want conclusion. You know, I hope Catherine, the song, can somehow empathize with a person like your wife. to just say, you know, I felt that too. Because this character in Catherine is not happy about, he's not necessarily enjoying this 100%. The longing brings up a lot of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand how she feels.
Something that's really surprising about Catherine is that it is so 80s. Like, what were you thinking?
I get that a lot. Well, the technical is when I built my studio in 2021, I finished Hard Times, but I was also kind of paying the bills and enjoying myself producing other talent. And a lot of them were female pop artists, and they'd want things that sounded kind of like the current stuff. Olivia Rodrigo or Taylor Swift or Sabrina Carpenter, Harry Styles. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that music uses synthesizers and drum machines. And so I would have to go learn how to do that. And in doing it, I completely fell in love with all of these tools. I don't know. It was like moving from black and white sketching to finally having spray paint. And the spray paint's like neon. And so when I had these new songs, I kind of couldn't go back, Dave. I was like, well, I don't want to go back to picking up a Telecaster. I want to put down this like Juno synthesizer or whatever. And, and there's nostalgia in there. You know, I grew up listening to Genesis and NXS, Tears for Fears, Don Henley and his kind of 80s heyday, current ones like the 1975 or stuff like that. And so, yeah, I just kind of accidentally found a new sound, and I'm not bad on the keyboard. And so out pops, you know, my new my new sound, I guess.
I don't want to say that I'm becoming fixated on the 80s, but maybe you are, because that 80s style also comes through on the single Violet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this whole thing record, by the way, completely got themed out. You know, if you look at the photography, if you look at the video, like everything is very lo-fi, shot on Kodak. So I tried to make this thing pretty cohesive and immersive, you know, mm-hmm. for people who listen to it. Violet is a very special song to me, and I'm glad you like it. Thank you.
I have to admit that I'm sort of puzzled by something that you sing on the chorus. White lies dance inside these violet eyes.
Yeah.
And preclude all my lyrical crimes. Now, I get it if you said music crimes, because yes, you're stealing the 80s sound. But lyrical crimes, that I don't understand.
I hesitate to explain, because I sometimes feel, Dave, that my explanations potentially ruin songs for people. But that's what we're here to do. So, okay. Violet, the lyrics are a daydream I had. And in this daydream, these two characters were mesmerized by each other, and they're lost in this moment in the night. The thing about love and intimacy and lust and the moment that all of those are just sort of trying to find their chemical balance is that you have no way of controlling that. And so the character is just mesmerized by this person he's falling in love with. But we don't know, where does trust come in? It doesn't yet. You fall in love and you act before you feel that this person's trustworthy. So there's danger. And that's what that scene is trying to describe.
Mm-hmm.
That what am I seeing in her? Is it invitation? Is it deception? Is it promise? Is it persuasion? White lies, they dance inside her violet eyes. But on his side, that causes him to say what needs to be said. And they prelude all my lyrical crimes. So these things that he's saying are also enticing. They're trying to make a believer out of her, but they might not be. I don't know. We're complex people, and we want complex things. And I just tried to paint kind of a fun scenario that if I am being autobiographical, I have found myself in a time or two. So that's what it is.
You really do get into writing the lyrical content. But you know, with a lot of bands, it's the music that dominates. What do you think? Which takes precedence? Is it the music or is it the lyrics for you?
They have to exist in the same room together. It's much like verbal and nonverbal. You know, it's not what's being said, it's how it's being said.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that for me, I try to find they inform one another and then they re-inform one another. And that's how the song gets shaped and shaped and shaped. And in the end, I just want it to feel like something cinematic. I want you to feel like what you're hearing, it becomes something you're seeing. At least with this record, that's what I wanted. I don't think they're anthems as much as they're pictures.
Oh, that's perfect. You've mentioned that Catherine and Violet are the first of a string of singles that you're putting out this year. So the full length is going to be how many songs?
Well, we don't exactly know yet, because I think the thing we're having fun is making the record as it's releasing. So there's 10 songs that are done, but I've actually redid Violet and Catherine, and I decided to do a cover of a Cars song called Drive.
Oh, right.
And I did all three of those songs with a string quartet. So I think at the end, we'll kind of have a more extended version of the album, which will sort of re-examine some songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think there'll be a shorter version for vinyl that'll be 10 songs. Online, you just never know, like, something's going to be, because, like, you can always add at the end or whatever. So, but yeah, that's kind of the plan right now. We'll have 6 singles, and then I'll put out the string versions, and then we'll release the second half of the record. Somewhere between 4 and 6 songs. You know, if people like the music, just keep in touch. I think email is awesome. That's the best. And then, of course, Instagram is great. Or follow on Spotify or however you like to listen to music. And so, yeah, every single every month for pretty much the end of the year. And then we start really releasing stuff toward the end of the year, like in bulk.
It's going to be great. Keaton Kaufman has been with The Antidote. I got to thank you for this talk, and I guess we've got lots to look forward to.
Man, absolutely, Dave. I'm just thrilled you reached out. Thanks again.